My guest is a continuation of our conversations with Remarkable Minds. We're going to talk about the severity of America's health care and a review of President Obama's health care reform. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, he is Dr. Quentin Young, and he is quite simply one of our nation's most distinguished medical physicians and a leading advocate for a universal health plan. He just recently retired from private practice after 61 years. He served as the physician for Martin Luther King, and also he was the chairman of the Medical Committee for Human Rights, chairman of the medical medicine at Cook County Hospital, a founder of the Health and Medicine Policy Research Group, and president of the American Public Health Association. And Dr. Young is now a clinical professor of preventive medicine and community health at the University of Illinois Medical School, and he's a founding member of the Chicago-based Physicians for a National Health Program, which is a nonprofit physician advocacy program. Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Young.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Young, I'd like to get an insider's view to set the record straight about what President Obama actually ran his campaign on regarding health care reform. There are those who claim he promised a single-payer universal model. Others say, while giving lip service to it, he actually dodged a firm commitment to universal care. And as a fellow Chicago resident and a community leader who provided health consultation and friendship to Obama, the senator and presidential candidate over the years, how would you compare Obama, the would-be president, with Obama, the commander-in-chief of the public's health issue?
Well, you did a good job of summarizing his evolution. About no less than 4 years ago, he was on public platforms for the record saying he supports single payer, it's the way to go. Then as his fortunes improved, and they certainly did, in those 4 short years, he became a national senator and finally candidate and then the president of the United States. He modified his position, began to say that if he was starting from scratch, he would go on a single payer system. And then more recently, in fact, as we speak, the position of the administration is we want to build on what we have experience with in this country, and that translates into relying on the employment-based insurance arrangement that many millions of Americans get. That's what's on the table now. Excuse me, I'm a little bit out of the cold. Well, that's where the president is, and you're absolutely right. He no longer says that single payer is the way he wants to go. They sort of mealy-mouthed expression, while single payer may work in many countries, here we want to build on what we have. Well, that has a nice ring to it, but it's crazy. The plan that we have is what has put us in this desperate straits. To put it straightforwardly, the employment-based insurance scheme is, for the American people, proven to be an increasingly empty promise. All the thousands of employees of the big three auto workers, for example, are losing their health insurance as these plants shut down. And we've had an increasing number of uninsured every year for the last 20, and we're now up to about 50 million people with no health insurance, and another 50 million with very poor insurance, so that with a serious illness, they're out of the loop. So we are very critical of the president's compromise. If you would ask me why he did that, obviously we don't get inside his mind, but the best answer I can give, it's a replay of what happened to President Clinton in 93 when he came forward with an ambitious plan. The industry attacked the plan and him ferociously and with a multi-million dollar media blitz, and by the time it was over in 94, we had nothing. And now it's, some 15 years later, and we're seeing another round. And let's understand why the forces opposing reform are so powerful. Healthcare in this country now cost, last year, $2.5 trillion. We're getting used to the word trillion, which is one-sixth of the gross domestic product. In other words, one out of $6 go to healthcare. And the companies that profit from it, notably for-profit insurance companies, and yes, the big pharma, the drug companies, and many other huge players, are very concentrated on making sure the Congress doesn't do anything to despoil their huge profits. And that's the way they act, and it's what we'd expect. I'm not complaining that they're acting according to script. I am complaining that they've brought the American health system to its knees. We're spending twice as much per capita. For every person in this country, we're spending $7,800. That's twice as much as the next three countries in the world. Switzerland, France, Germany spend roughly $4,000 for systems that are much more effective. And what I mean by that is outcomes are better. What are the outcomes? Well, in health, we measure things like life expectancy. They do significantly better than we do. Infant mortality and maternal mortality, those are useful measures. We're way down on that list there, way ahead of us. Prevention of preventable diseases, meaning immunization and public health measures. Again, we're 37th in the world on these measures, and these countries are in the top 10. So we are not only not getting a decent health system, we're paying a confiscatory price. And now it's, as you know, and I guess the reason you're talking to me, it's very much in play in our Congress. Now, it's not an even playing field. Senator Baucus from Montana is the chairman of the powerful Finance Committee that has the main jurisdiction in the Senate for this bill. Senator Baucus has said for the past 6 months, every time he makes a public statement, that everything is on the table except single payer. Now that, in a democratic society, that's almost incomprehensible. Why would you take the reform that is most popular and 60%, well, New York Times on Friday said 82% favor the government health insurance. And listen to this, the American medical profession, which is I'm a part, and I can testify is extremely conservative, and over the years was by and large opposed to these reforms, has turned around. Last April, in Annals of Internal Medicine, a prestigious refereed journal, a study was revealed that showed that 59% of America's doctors now favor a government program. Now, that's a turnaround for American doctors. And I put it this way, the American doctors, of which I'm one, found that there's something worse than government, because everybody was going around with the boogeyman, oh, government medicine. And that something is corporations. The corporations now control the American health system. As they must, they work for maximum profits. And what this translates is denial of care, raising of premiums, putting people in bankruptcy. You can't run a health system on those principles.
I appreciate your overview. I'd like to go into some specifics now. I have studied the English, French, and the Canadian healthcare system. But using the Canadian healthcare system as an example, the 10 leading arguments against any of that being done in the United States, when I looked at the actual facts, were wrong. And yet the major media, who should have gone up to Canada for itself, did its own original investigation and not listened to the lobby groups and the foundations that are paid by the lobby groups to bring out information, have attacked Canada's system. And yet, when you look here, you find that over $400 billion a year is accounted for by fraud in our existing system. You also see that from 27 to 31% of all the money in that system goes to the private insurance industries. One healthcare corporation paid the largest fine in American history for a corporation. It was over $1.1 billion. And you got to ask, what kind of company's got $1 billion in cash it can give away for crimes that it committed? And then I start looking, I go to LexisNexis, and I start looking at lawsuits that insurance companies or medical for-profit corporations in the hospital business have paid. And it's into the billions and billions of dollars, and yet no reputations are sullied. No one says the model itself must be corrected. So then when you look at, well, how much are we spending on prevention? Surely the Surgeon General, the U.S. Public Health Service, would start to deal with the diseases we know could be impacted if we, as a country,
Yeah.
And individually began to eat better, look at our environment. Zero. Not a single step has been taken to get Americans healthier except, well, stop smoking. But that doesn't work because the government in the different states that won $323 billion in the Medicare suits that were brought against the seven smoking corporations reinvested in sin stocks and tobacco stocks because it gave a better return to the state. I thought that's rather ironic. You sue a state, you sue a tobacco company, you make a settlement, then you reinvest in the tobacco company. So we have no preventative program. We don't look at anything that's natural, non-toxic, ever. We look at only a pharmaceutical approach when study after study has shown that some work and some do not, and some are deadly. And then you look at the cost of all this and you think, surely a single payer would be better. Then you look at other countries, and indeed, in those countries, it is, and it doesn't bankrupt the average citizen. And yet, when it came to those meetings that Obama's held in the White House, unless I'm mistaken, you weren't one of the people invited. In fact, none of the more that had the arguments were invited. Only the health insurance agencies were invited. Bukakis only invited the people who are engaged in health insurance agencies, the medical system, and the pharmaceutical industry, all of which were invited. But someone advocating for single-payer coverage was not invited. Am I on base or off base about the power that these lobbies have in controlling our health care system?
Well, I certainly agree with absolutely everything you said. And it parallels our experience in the Physicians for a National Health Program. We've been around 20 years. We have very close ties with Canadian leadership, and we deal with the Canadian physician group. They're not without criticism of things that need to be improved. But the difference between the major premises and activities of the health system in Canada and ours are as night and day. The Canadian people, when tested, 96% prefer their system over an American alternative. And they know the U.S., Canadians and Americans cross that border a lot, so it's an informed opinion. And I agree with you that from all appearances, the power players, the people who are in this for maximum profits, are the ones who have the president's ear. And that's very bad. Not only in principle that the beneficiaries of a bad system should be calling the shots, but also their solutions, and they're hardly solutions, but their proposals will not solve anything, and the system, which is deteriorating, is going to get worse. Just this past week, there's a number of headlines in the major papers that tell the whole story. For example, they said that the reforms that haven't really been fully revealed in the sense that they haven't given the actual bills that they're going to mark up, that it's too costly, the stuff that they've proposed, which is partial. Example, Senator Kennedy, who is Mr. Health in the Senate and in the past has supported really good stuff, presently has a bill which will add $1 trillion in the next 10 years and still leave 15 million people uncovered, uninsured. The pundits are saying that put a huge hole in the president's program. Now, today they're celebrating the fact, listen to this, that the big drug companies are agreeing to cut in half costs of drugs to the poor. Well, that begs a question. If you can cut the cost of a drug to a huge sector of the population, what's been going on for the last 20 or 30 years? The profits that you've pocketed have become astronomical. These are minor shifts in the problem. We need a fundamentally sound system that's based on a single payer. It's worth noting that 19 countries that have two characteristics. They're industrialized, and therefore their economies are advanced, and they have democratic societies. They have elections, and they have accountability. Every one of those 19 countries, except us, have moved to a single-payer system. And as I tried to point out earlier, are doing much better than we are in the resulting product, getting away with half or less per capita costs, at the same time much enhanced health status, and not least solidarity, a sense of pleasure, of satisfaction with their government, that they look after the man on the street. We have a healthcare system that puts people in bankruptcy and jeopardy every day, and the solutions that are coming forth are not addressing this. To borrow from Senator Baucus, single payer is not on the table. We want it on the table. We want the American people, who when polled support the notion of a government tax-supported system, we want them to have a voice.
I agree. The trouble is we've got a problem here. When the majority of Americans want single payer, and the evidence is there. I mean, look, just a study shows that as many as 119 million Americans would shift from private coverage to a universal government health plan if the latter was in place. So if we look at this figure's public vote on the quality of health care in today's medical system, it's clear as an indictment that not only our health care system is failing many people, but that it is also providing horrendous medical services. A nation's health care can perhaps be summarized as, quote, the best medical care possible with the least amount of money to the largest number of people. And three things: quality care, low cost, and universal access. Could you address each of these as we now see them practiced and implemented in the U.S. today? And also the idea that if the majority of Americans want something and they're strong in their voice of wanting it, we currently have 49 million Americans uninsured, another 100 million who are insured, but their insurance may not cover what they have, like catastrophic illness. It was the number one or number two cause of bankruptcy for the last 7 years in the United States. Home foreclosures is now the number one, but right behind it, and for years, it was medical care. And no one chose to address this. So what does it say about our legislators who choose not to care what Americans think?
Well, we have to first reckon with the fact that the finance of their campaigns is heavily indebted to these drug companies and these health care companies. For example, Senator Baucus, who is head of this operative committee, that is to say the finance committee, has the main jurisdiction over health legislation. Last year he received $500,000 from the industry, and over the preceding 6 years, over $1 million. Well, what can I say? I'm not making an accusation that he's been bought off, but when you have these huge contributions to a senator's political campaign, and then he says publicly, with the power to make it stick, that single payer is off the table, it's very hard not to connect those two events. So we have an ongoing problem in this country in campaign finance reform, because these people are very sensitive to these huge contributions. Well, I needn't say the obvious thing, to the extent that what we're discussing is actually a quid pro quo, that huge campaign contributions result in legislation favorable to special interests, democracy is dead. And only occasionally can this kind of unity against reform be breached. I'm old enough to have participated in the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s, and things were as bad then in regard to segregation and racism in this country as it is in the health system today. And it happened. It happened for a couple of reasons, in my opinion. One was it was this country's moving forward as a nation. Couldn't happen if we didn't correct that reality, that in the word that segregation was not compatible with our national interests. And of course, there were very, very powerful expressions of that by the black population, and not a little bit of the white. And we had some very important changes that you could say that Obama's election, the president, is one of the byproducts of that struggle against racism. And so I have a certain optimism that the healthcare system is very close to that point in history where it's not tolerable. It's just the society can't keep moving if it doesn't solve the problem of healthcare for the American people. Now, the irony of this, I'm sure you've noted, is that we have everything we need to be the best in the world. you know, the popular word from the American Medical Association, they have the best system in the world.
Dr. Young just hold your thoughts for one second. I just want to announce my guest, Dr. Quentin Young, because I realize people tune in at different times during the hour. So please continue.
Well, just that we could have the best in the world. This is the one social problem we have where all the tools we need to make it good, to fix it, are in place. Certainly the money, we're starting out with twice as much per capita as any country in the world. I'd say it was downright unpatriotic for anybody to say with twice as much, we couldn't do at least as well, maybe a little better than anybody else. We have a superb health workforce, doctors, nurses, and other health workers. We have a remarkable plant. By that, I mean hospitals and clinics. So all the tools that we need to make it happen are in place. But the intrusion of for-profit corporations in the transaction has held us back and indeed has dragged us down. So you and your listeners have to recognize there's a civic task. You have to communicate with your legislators and tell them what you would like to have happen. I think that would make a difference. In fact, I think it's beginning to make a difference now.
Just two more issues. I believe this entire discussion on health care reform in Washington is taking place in a vacuum and disconnected with the economic realities facing Americans, especially the crisis facing small business owners who may be required to provide health coverage, and the fact that one of the principal problems Americans are facing at this moment is a dramatic decrease in savings. This means that it is impossible for most working Americans to be able to save a nest egg for that time when a loved one becomes ill and has to pay out of pocket regardless of whether they have moderate insurance or not. And moreover, a recent Thomson Reuters survey released just today of 100,000 households show that 40% of respondents feel they need to postpone any health care for several months. Now, as a physician, you know what this means. Their conditions will only get more serious without care and will become all the more costly as a result. How do you see the economic crisis related to the necessity of and the necessary conversations on health reform, and what is fundamentally lacking in these discussions that are going on now in Washington?
Well, it's a fact that when we were in recent rather prosperous times, the health system was falling far short of its task. With the economic downturn, there's a sharp increase in numbers of people who just can't afford or feel they can't afford that visit to a doctor, and they fend for themselves. Some, of course, make it. People do get well without doctor intervention, but many don't. And the health status of the American people, in my opinion, is declining. And we're beginning to, in some respects, resemble third world countries in their absence of real support for the health of the nation. I think the economic downturn, which you allude to, has a profound effect in accelerating the crisis. What it hasn't so far done is brought along enough Congress people, you know, senators and representatives, to get the kind of reform this country needs. And that's exactly where we are right now. I would be happiest if Senator Obama, who I would call him correctly, President Obama, who's demonstrated his superb political skills, there's no denying them, and his ability to inspire people, if he would go to the wisdom of just 4 years ago and say that, as he said then, single payer is the way to go and he supports it, I'm sure he could bring the American people along. Now, would there be a really tough fight? You can bet your life. These industries I've talked about will spend whatever it takes, tens of millions of dollars in misinformation. But I have, at the end of the day, enough confidence in the American people that we'll do the right thing. So you're right to point out that we're entering a period where all the contradictions and all the problems are going to be worse, and we have to have a huge public awareness to get a decent health system for our people.
Well, my final question for you. I'm looking at the clock and we're out of that time. I really appreciate the opportunity to have shared shared your ideas with us today. I'm hopeful that at some point President Obama will reconsider his trajectory here and realize that there are people, citizens as well as professionals like yourself, who will just kind of nudge and remind, remember when you believed in this ideal for the average person? Now you're getting all this pressure from the special interest groups. And too often we see the special interest groups become dominant in what they need. They're writing laws that protect them and are self-serving for them. They have undue influence. And as a result, we have the unintended consequences of their actions. And so I'm hopeful there will be change. And I thank you very much, Dr. Quentin Young, for being on today to share your insights with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.